you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, I'm Janet. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
Janet, what is a podcast?
It's like the radio, but there's no music, and literally anyone can do one at any moment about any subject. And there's a billion of them.
Sounds great. Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about Season 1, Episode 3, Tahani al-Jamil. Eleanor suspects that Tahani wrote her mysterious note and investigates her. She ultimately ends up comforting Tahani, who is sad due to Jianyu's vow of silence. Michael tries to get Chidi to forget about his thesis that he wrote on Earth and pick up a new hobby. Janet tries out several personalities. Michael hires Eleanor as his assistant to figure out what's wrong with the neighborhood. Jianyu reveals to Eleanor that he wrote her note and that he doesn't belong in the good place either. This episode includes guest cast George Basil, Drew Brooks, Sandra Savalos, and Josh Siegel. My guests today are Camille Bratkowski, set designer, and Jamila Jamil, who plays Tahani.
Uh-oh.
Al-Jamil. Welcome. Everything is fine.
Thank you.
Is it?
Is it?
You all right?
I'm good.
Great.
Welcome to the show.
Hi.
You are the title character of this episode. Is that daunting?
Everything about being on the show is daunting.
Is this indeed your first foray into life?
Yes.
Did you think I was going to say a television show?
I was born on this show. The audition for The Good Place was the first time I'd ever acted. But, you know, I'd been a TV host on BBC Radio 1 and a radio host as well on BBC Radio 1 and Channel 4 in England and pretended to like a lot of really rubbish music. So one could say I have been acting for 10 years.
We were discussing with Alison Jones in a previous episode what it means to be a host. What is a host? What is a presenter, rather, on BBC Radio?
You're just sort of the orchestrator of the fun.
Okay.
Like, the spotlight is never on you, it's near you.
Okay.
You sort of like bask in the periphery of the limelight, which is very enjoyable to me because I don't like to be the centre of attention, unlike Tahani. I like the idea of being able to be part of the fun without having any responsibility to be an adult.
Interesting. Now, Camille, it must be different with the character of Tahani than it is for others to design set pieces. Things are grander, right? Things are bigger for Tahani.
Quite right.
Yes, most definitely. For Tahani's salon, we had to recreate a part of the mansion that you see in the opening sequences of the show. And that was a scramble to find all the proper moldings and to get it highly gilted. So
that's not an existing location. That's something that you build from scratch?
The salon is.
And is that on a soundstage?
And that's on one of our stages. It was repurposed also into a bedroom for her at one point.
The same room?
In the same room. We just moved some things around.
Later in the series, I got to have a sex scene in there. It's exciting.
But it definitely does call for thinking about, you know, things that are pretty and trying to get into that English side when we go to her parents' house where she's growing up and walking into that location and knowing. It's like, oh, this is amazing.
Now, is that a location that exists in real life, or is that something that you scouted elsewhere? Where is that?
Tahani's childhood home is a location that was actually, I believe, even used for Hitchcock, movie Hitchcock.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it was...
Can you say where it is? Is it...
I block those things out. Okay. I usually have people drive me there.
Is it in Los Angeles?
It is in Los Angeles. Okay. It's in Beverly Hills, as
was
most
of the... Was this a $72 million mansion?
It might be.
Yeah, it was insane. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Why do
it's
you know beautiful. The sticker price of the mansion? Were you considering
it? Because I ask, because I'm nosy.
Okay.
Yeah.
You asked the location.
I don't have any class. I like to know these things. I want to know. I don't want to know. No, I know, but that's just a voice, isn't it?
It is.
I also, interestingly, on that location that we got to film in, like from the very beginning of the series, every so often, when we, like, for example, when I come walking down the staircase mm-hmm. in episode one, we found out that downstairs there are some, you know, sexy rooms, apparently.
Oh.
Yeah.
By sexy,
you
mean...
You can cut that out. You don't have to talk about that. I just realised that might not be appropriate for this, but there was some...
Are you referring to...
Yeah, that's correct.
No, I'm not referring to you pointing to Grant to cut this out. I'm saying, are you saying these are 50 Shades of Grey rooms?
They were like massage oil laden rooms. There were very big beds, very, very big beds, circular beds that had massage... We didn't use those for filming, but they were there. In the location. I don't know why I chose to tell you this. I'm nervous.
I don't know why you know it.
Well, because we heard. Because, you know, they would have gone and looked around. I realise that I'm getting everyone in trouble. And maybe they weren't supposed to go down there. We should. I'm going to leave. You know what?
Perfect.
You guys have got this. I'm
going
to go.
Just you and me. Speaking of getting in trouble, I do know about you that leading up to the debut of this show...
All right. Yeah, go on.
Leading up to the debut of this show, you were legitimately concerned about spoiling... Episode 113, the big twist, mm-hmm. the Holy Mother Forking Shirt Balls. And mm-hmm. you told me that you would run from interviewers. You would confirm just that you're part of the show and then...
Yeah. I would run. I would do a lot of kind of like Lassie-esque behavior where you just nod at someone until they are exhausted. Mm-hmm. Or I would just... It was a real sense of panic. The worst was the TCA, is the first... I think the Critics Association panel where you have to sit there. And I'd never done anything like that before. And I've never had a secret to keep. Ever, because everything I've done has just been live hosting. It's never been about me, and now suddenly I'm involved in this huge elaborate ruse, and I wanted to scream at the ending. Like, I didn't just say it softly, I wanted to scream it out to everyone. I wanted to run up to people, grab their faces and tell them the ending. And I don't know why, it's just like a compulsive evil part of my brain that just wants to get into trouble, just wants to.
I think
it's like an
natural.
Anxiety thing. I just can't keep, I hate keeping secrets.
I have a fear of heights, and if I get anywhere near the edge of anything, a cliff or a railing, I sinisterly want to go near the edge.
Yeah.
Just to say, like, what would this feel like?
Yeah,
I'm not
to push
suicidal.
Your boundaries. Yeah.
It's horrifying. Now, did any of your presenting background, I mean, you used to try to draw these secrets out of mm-hmm. performers in movies and television shows.
Yeah, I've definitely felt like I really don't like being interviewed. No offense. You're doing a lovely job and I love you.
I don't care.
But I don't, it's a real lack of control where suddenly you realize that there's something to lose mm-hmm. and that freaks me out. Definitely. I don't like being interviewed. I like to be in control because I will just give things away or I'll say the wrong thing or I'll talk about sexy rooms downstairs in places. You know, I can't be trusted.
Happening.
No one needs this.
Did you... You didn't live here prior. You lived in England.
I lived in London, yeah.
And so you moved here for this?
I did not move here for this. I moved here because I was cold and sad. And I'd been in England for 28 years. And I kind of had a big health scare that turned out to be all right in the end. It was serious, but not too serious. And it just kind of gave me that wake-up call that you need, I'd say, every 10 years, just to remind you to take a look at your life and,
sure.
and wonder if your body is trying to tell you something. And also think about how lucky you are that it hasn't turned into death and that you still have time and a chance to do things that you haven't yet done.
Sure.
And I knew that one thing I'd always wanted to do was travel, and I'd always wanted to live just for a while, even in California. I didn't think I'd like it, because I'd heard terrible things.
There are some terrible things.
I came here and I've been seduced. And then I was here for about a year just hanging out with my boyfriend. He was on tour. We were just sort of relaxing together. I think it was like we have something called a gap year in England where you find yourself.
This is between like high school and college?
Yeah. Yeah, and so I just never took one because I didn't go to college, so I wasn't really allowed one.
You took all of them.
Yeah, yeah, I've been on a decade-long gap here. But I just wanted to kind of figure out what I wanted. I thought I wanted to just be a writer, and then this audition came along, and I knew that Mike Schur would be at the audition. And I didn't want to be an actor because I didn't think I would know how to because I'd never done it before. And sure. I respect it as a, well, I used to respect it as a craft and a trade. Now I see how easy it is. No, I'm joking.
You're not joking. And I
your face
love,
was amazing
I love and hate
when
that.
I said that.
No, you make this look easy and it's offensive.
But I don't find it easy. Trust me. I found it very intimidating. But Mike Schur was at the audition. I was as a young writer. I wanted to meet him. So I went to the audition thinking nothing more would come of it other than the fact that I might have some minor banter with Mike Schur that I could hang on to and tell people about for the rest of my life.
Sure.
And then that maniac gave me a job on this show. And I spent the first entire year just imagining headlines when the reviews came out saying Indian woman ruins NBC sitcom. and drags it through the mud. And thankfully that did not happen, which is good.
It didn't happen or no. That headline wasn't written?
What? Not yet. Not yet. There's still time. Season 3. Maybe this will be the kicker. This will be the one that I destroy.
Only time will tell.
But I've been learning how to act from Ted Danson. What an acting coach.
I mean,
what a drama school.
That's high level. That's a masterclass.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, a masterclass in how to be a human. Like, he's a really kind, gentle, nice dude.
Mm-hmm.
I like that guy.
Yeah. Self-referred to himself as a national treasure recently.
More than once.
Humble.
Yeah. It's both. I mean, I do love that he knows that about himself.
Yeah.
He's kidding, also, not kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
We text from time to time and...
oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Clang.
And it's always a wake-up call to realize, like, oh, I'm texting with Ted Danson. But just to keep things in perspective, I always do say, I begin text by saying... This is Mark. I play Sean on The Good Place on NBC. Just to remind him each time.
Do you also feel that way when we're texting?
I don't.
Oh, that's cool.
We do text.
We do text.
We've had lunch.
We're actual friends.
We've been friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Camille.
Yes.
I think that visitors to Los Angeles, even people that live here, might be very surprised if they were to take a tour, for instance, of the Huntington Gardens and Library in San Marino, California.
Oh, they would love it.
There are a lot of faces to that place.
There are.
I bring it up because that's a location that is used in various ways on the show. Certainly as the Good Place, the sort of outer reaches of the Good Place neighborhood, but you've used it for flashbacks for several, right?
Mostly we've done it and used the location for the exteriors. Yes, and for some of the flashbacks. Trying to think of any of the flashbacks offhand, but they're not coming to mind, I'm sorry to say. But a lot of 103 was shot there because...
Are the exteriors for Tahani's house and then the clown house, Eleanor's little fun house next to it, is that there as well?
Those are actually computer generated.
Those are composites.
Okay. Yeah, composites that we took an area of the Huntington Gardens and... Then as a plate, and then our great effects department dropped in these one little house and one really huge house,
<Giant.
laughs> which utilized the front of the actual location in Beverly Hills. And so that's a composite shot that's done there at the Huntington. The beautiful Chinese garden where we... get to watch Tahani and Eleanor bond.
Right.
And
that's where the bridges and the sort
bridges,
of ponds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons that it's so lovely to go there is because we do get that sense of grandeur and scope of what we in LA know is a beautiful place.
It's gorgeous, yeah.
And what better place than to call it the Good Place?
It's true.
Yeah, it does look like heaven.
It really does.
It really does. And
that's where I shot my first ever scene, was in those gardens. My first ever scene on The Good Place was shot in those unbelievable gardens.
Which was what?
That's the moment that I meet Eleanor. So it's the first thing I ever shot was the first time you ever see me on the show in
the
pilot.
Is that the boop, the first boop?
It's the first boop. Boop means fart in England.
Oh, is that true?
Yes. A little boop.
So this is funny to you on several levels.
So many levels. It was so hard to boop on Eleanor's nose and know that means something very different to me. yeah, and Speaking of farts, Ted Danson kept on pretending to fart on me. Mm. I hope he was pretending. I don't know. But he kept on, like, explicitly making sounds and pretending to fart on me because he could see that I was nervous. And this was his very unconventional technique in relaxing a newcomer, was to consistently pretend to just be like, oh, sorry. It was a really bizarre way to... I think he could tell that I hero worshipped him.
Right.
And so I think he was trying to...
Ruin it
immediately. Destroy the image, which worked. And
it was
no respect for him anymore. Yeah.
That's fantastic. That's
yeah, what a memory, though. That was literally my first 5 minutes of acting, which is running away from Ted Danson's fake or not fake farts.
I think we'll leave in the sex rooms and cut that out.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, he's writing down that I've said something about farts.
Camille, what is your life like? Like, how do you go about, you're handed a project like this. Mm-hmm. What was involved in the process of deciding that the Huntington would be the perfect place to offer these, you know, within one sort of, I don't know, 200-acre area or whatever it is, that you could get a lot of work out of it? And then how do you go in to scope it, to measure, to say this could go here and we could, and is it part of, it's probably not part of your job to do logistics of where trucks can go and things, but that's certainly a consideration, right?
Yeah. The art department as a team, because we have our production designer, and then we have our art director, and then there's myself as a set designer, and then our decorator. And with the locations department, because it's not just one person making this decision, because, I mean, we knew we were going to the Huntington. That was just a given. It was going to offer us so many options and opportunities in scope and grandeur. Mm-hmm. And what normally ends up happening is the locations will go out during their tech scout as with the producers, and they will look and go, okay, with the DP and everybody, all the other 30 people that have to make the set and scene work, and they'll say, this is the angle we want. And from that point, they send me out to actually measure the location.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And put it all on paper and create a map, basically. And allows all the other departments to then communicate to their people, we need X number of feet of cable. We need to hide the Jennies back here. Oh, guess we need to
Jenny
put some greens.
Jenny is Hollywood for generator.
Generators, because you can't just plug into the local outlet.
Right.
And, you know. So at that point in time, we're looking at it from, okay, well, how's this angle going to play? What do we need the chairs here? You know, and then the decorator comes in and goes, oh, we need to match this style. We need to do that. And it really is a team effort, you know, where everybody from the top down, from the writers down to, you know, the person lugging the cables is like, make sure that stays behind the green pot. Okay, because we don't want that in the shot. So,
right.
But yeah, it's... It really is a team effort, and my job really is just to go in and make sure that everybody has in front of them when they start the episode a map of what and where everything's supposed to be. And if we're building scenery, that's to make sure that the construction team actually has construction drawings that they can expeditiously and very quickly put these sets up, because we usually are only given a few days.
Now, you're using tape measures? Are you using lasers? to map some of these areas are sweeping.
Yes. And the answer to your question is yes, both.
Both.
And I also have this wonderful thing that I usually get teased about called a wheel.
Okay.
And it's like a surveyor going
out.
Oh,
sure. I've seen
and,
that.
Yeah. And you just take your measurements and draw it all out. And thank God for Google.
And how long in how much in advance Googler. Of you know, before the cameras roll on the bridge in the Chinese garden at the Huntington, how much earlier would you have been there? Days, weeks?
No, I would say probably at max 5 days.
Good heavens.
Yeah. Our turnarounds are pretty quick. You guys know how fast you have to shoot and learn your lines and everything.
Right.
Tack on about another week, and all that stuff has to be done by the time you guys are ready to go.
You do an amazing job. It's
Thank
the,
you.
The sets are so elaborate. It's so ridiculous. You walk in, and you just feel like you're in another world.
They are indeed gorgeous. They also seem so positive. You know, the good place as a thing. Like, there must have been early conversations about color scheme and feel.
Early on, well... We would have pictures of all the facades of, say, the back lot,
mm-hmm.
where the Good Place resides, our Good Place neighborhood. And yes, it's like what colors play well together. and what colors are not being used. And we had great designers on this show that allow that to happen and try and create that magical environment through color.
I think I had heard from costumes. I don't know that I've ever heard this from the top of the food chain, but every once in a while, I think wardrobe tried to put, you know, Ted or someone in something red, and they would say, "No, no, no, nothing red." They didn't want the audience to look for signs of a devil or any sort of characteristic like that early on.
Yeah, that's very true. We wanted to. When I started, it's like I didn't know the story arc.
Right.
I walked in, and there on the wall was the designer's first attempt, you know, to find the perfect green. You know, welcome, everything is fine.
Oh, that green, the first green.
The first green, the first thing you see.
Wow.
And that was what welcomed you into the office of our department every year. You know, every day I'd see that. And I was like, wow, okay. And for me, until the very end, this was always the good place.
Sure.
So, of course, it had to be light and airy and bright. And
did you not know the ending of the show when you were doing all of this?
No.
Oh, that's fun. That's very clever. We didn't know the ending either. Yeah. I think that was great. It was a really clever way to like not let anyone also manipulate their acting,
right,
or for you to want to like maybe be tempted to leave tiny, tiny little signs.
Little winks and nods towards
exactly.
I'm being
evil. I think it's really clever. It's a really big risk to take, but I think it was and hard to keep that secret, especially because Ted kept on telling everyone the bloody secret.
That's what we understand now.
Yeah, everyone. He told everyone.
Mike
literally
told,
not one person.
Mike mentioned that in the first episode of this podcast.
Insane.
And it's crazy that that's the case. Did your approach to Tahani change after you had that sit down? There is a wonderful video, which I've talked about at length, of Mike Schur and Kristen Bell sitting down with what they call the babies, the other four cast members.
30-something-year-old babies.
to reveal to them about two-thirds of the way through the season how season one ended. And it's amazing and delicious, and you should go watch it. You were all very shocked. But after that, did that affect how you played Tahani? Did it impact anything on your day-to-day?
Not really. I guess just I think it didn't really kick in until season two, which if you haven't seen it, I won't talk about right now. But it was like, you know, I mean, that was the very end when we find out, basically. We found out one episode before we actually shot it. So I just kind of didn't have time for it to go in. It's like the episode where our memories are being erased again and again and again in season two.
Yes.
Is the one where mostly you have to kind of like dip back into your most naive childlike self. But other than that, no, I had a great time. I loved knowing that.
The town square that you mentioned
exists.
That's on the back lot at Universal Pictures, Universal Studios.
It does.
And it's sort of a French alpine town of some variety. What has it done before? Do you have any idea?
I believe it used to be Spartacus Square. Used to be part of it. And then I believe they shot, I want to say, The Hunchback of Notre Dame. It was a part of the lot that...
What is Spartacus Square?
Spartacus Square. There was an old movie.
No, I know the movie.
Yeah. They took it down right before, I think, we even started revamping the back lot.
Spartacus was filmed where The Good Place is now filmed.
I believe so. Part
wow.
of it, yeah.
This is amazing.
So that little back lot area was in quite a bit of disarray. And the studio had started to revamp it. And we came in and put a lot of elbow grease and paint on that little part of the lot that had been overlooked for a long time.
Sure.
And now it is one of the favorite spots for the tram tour. The first couple of seasons. And then when we came back for season two, we found out that one of the other TV shows had come in, or a movie had come in, and basically bombed it.
Really?
They shot out windows. It was for some war scene, and we had to go back and redo it, rebuild it, repaint it, rebuild it. Basically redo.
I'll never forget the first time I saw that back lot. That was a really surreal moment, because I think the whole time I'd been shooting the show, even when I found out I'd got the show, the whole time I just kept on... I was certain, I think I'm still a bit certain, that I'm still asleep on the flight over to America. And this is just a very long, mm-hmm. elaborate dream because there's no way this could ever happen.
Sure.
And then what didn't help that was the first time I stepped onto the back lot, which was so beautifully done. And it really looked like a proper Hollywood film set. I'd never been on anything like that. And then there was just a giraffe standing there in the middle. I was like, oh, no, definitely a dream. Like, clearly this is a dream.
I'm in a coma.
This giraffe is a giraffe walking towards me. I'm on a Hollywood film set. I'm a quote unquote actress. This is definitely not real. And Ted Danson and a giraffe. Like, how am I supposed to cope?
No.
If history is any indication, you pretend to fart on them.
Yes.
what a jewel that piece is, though. Jamila and I were part of a Television Academy event there just the other night, and this is just something that other shows don't have. It's this existing, you know, Central Park theater kind of thing, and that exists practically all the way up to the train station. And they had they had frozen yogurt, and they were giving out warm blankets from the warm blanket store. I mean, it's this real existing piece of Hollywood that people should come see. They should take the Universal tour, the tram tour.
I think it really is incredible.
It's a cute, precious piece of this back lot.
There's not a lot that has to be done in the editing regarding like colors or anything, because it really does just look that beautiful in person.
Yeah.
I mean, on me, there's a lot of grading, and millions have been spent to redo my whole face. I'm not even Indian, just for diversity. Oh, he's right. He's got his pen out.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh,
God. I love the English accent. You do it well.
Thank you.
Yeah. So fake. You actually did do for me not even a random mumps accent, but an even more off-putting American accent the other night.
Oh, you mean like my kind of like Valley girl? Everyone can do a Valley girl. Oh, my God. This is so exciting to be here with you guys. This is lit.
We're going to take a break.
Bye. I'll leave.
Why don't we listen to a clip?
So, tell me about yourself. I mean, I want to hear it all, girlfriend. The good, the bad, the really bad, the embarrassing, the humiliating. Just, let's bond.
Okay, well, I was born in Pakistan, raised in London, schooled in Paris. But I think the primary reason that I'm in the good place is that I raise quite a lot of money for non-profit groups.
Oh. Did you ever skim a little off the top for yourself?
Oh, gracious, no, no. Every penny was accounted for. And as I raised nearly $60 billion, it's quite a lot of pennies. Mm. But I also dabbled in some other professions. I was a model, a museum curator, an it girl, and... Oh, I was Baz Luhrmann's muse for a while. That was quite fun.
Modeling? That's a crazy life. Want to tell me about that rock bottom you probably hit?
Well, I didn't really do it for long. Couture just doesn't fit my body. I'm cursed with ample bosom.
And yet you soldier on.
Oh, this is silly. So Tahani means congratulations in Arabic, and Al Jamil means beautiful, so my full name altogether means...
Congratulations, beautiful.
Thanks, Anna. Big flirt.
That's bizarre how much I remember all of those lines so vividly. As you were playing that, I was doing all the little voices along with it, which is like also just narcissism gone completely mad.
I'm glad you recognize that.
Yeah.
Because it 100% is.
Yeah. No, I'm a monster. I'm fine with it.
It was remarkable that you were able to mimic them verbatim, like perfectly along with the recording.
I live for this show.
Do you...
I'm a super fan.
Do you watch the show? Do you love the show?
Yeah, I love the show. Well, there's so much that we're not around for each other's scenes. So it's so great to see what else happened outside of, you know, your very important bubble. You get to like step out and see the whole show as a whole, which is so exciting. And the cast is so brilliant. Everyone's so funny. We have such great writers. It's a real joy and pleasure to watch. I'm very proud of it. To be a part of it.
I'm glad. I don't think that that's narcissism. I think that that's valid. And
yeah, occasionally I'm human, Mark.
Not in my experience, okay. But I allow that may be the case someday. They offer you some ridiculous sayings on the show, which I believe may be fake Britishisms. Mm-hmm. Things like whisper in your snicker box.
Yeah, which sounds like a disgusting expression.
It sounds...
Such filth.
Very filthy.
Right in the gutter.
Are there others that you remember and do you hear from friends at home saying, like, what does that mean? That's not us. Is that offensive to a Brit?
No, because I don't have any friends who are posh. Like, I don't have any friends who are, like, Tahani level of posh and wealthy. So I think there's a lot of things who me and my friends, we don't know if it might exist or not, because we don't tend to know people, like, who basically are loosely involved within the monarchy, you know. So maybe whispering your snicker box is... a real thing. I don't think so, though. There were plenty of ridiculous things. I don't think I could grab one out of my brain right now, but it's some really absurd things are written for me to say, because I think that the writers have a certain idea of what fancy English people are like.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I understand that. And we kind of like, we negotiate as to like how ridiculous I have to be on the show. But it kind of adds to the colour of Tahani.
It does.
Yeah.
Some of it seems very well informed. So yes. Much so that one might argue that there's not much blue sky between Jamila and Tahani.
Explain what you mean immediately or I'll stab you.
I don't want to say that this was told to us on the last episode of this podcast. And I don't want to say that it was, I don't know, Alan Yang. but he's told us that you have met with, that he went to a party, I think, with Jay-Z and you were there.
Oh, yeah. I did say to him, we were in the middle of a dance floor and you did have like a bunch of, it was their after party for the Oscars. So uh-huh. You had the entire world of people that we'd grown up loving there. And like, there was one moment where I was dancing in between. I don't know any of these people. I'm not friends with them. But I had Naomi Campbell on one side of me and Puff Daddy on the other. And I just sort of like moseyed my way through on the dance floor in between them. And I was dancing. And then Alan was right next to me, also dancing on that same dance floor, surrounded by celebrities. And he made eye contact with me. And I just turned to him and I was like, this is the most Tahani moment of all time. This is exactly how she spends her Sunday night.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Naomi didn't want anything to do with me.
Had you met her before? Had you ever interviewed her before?
Nope. I just really felt like because she was the kind of person Tahani would be friends with, that her and I would have an immediate bond. But I am, in fact, not Tahani and don't have any friends of such elite class. Lovely, wonderful friends, but they're not Naomi. and she just didn't want it. She didn't want me.
Wasn't into it?
No.
Huh.
Yeah, she looked through me.
Oh, good
like
heavens.
I was a pane of glass.
That reminds me of a very funny, I suppose, Instagram video that you did. You were at a concert. And I think the concert was finishing and accepted it all as your applause.
Yeah, so I was at a Kendrick Lamar gig and he got like a 5-minute standing ovation where he just stood on stage and I decided it was for me.
You were just off the corner of the stage and you're like, oh, thank you so much.
And so I stood there like the queen, just like bowing and, you know, raising my hand and like telling people to stop because it was so embarrassing.
So monstrous.
Am I coming across great right now? No. But it is worth a look at that video, which is on my Instagram if you want to see it.
Please do.
Very
check it
ridiculous.
Out. In this episode named after your character, you were trying to draw out this person that you had been told had been your soulmate, and you were acting with Manny, and Manny wasn't able to emote. He would nod for yes and nod for no.
Mm-hmm.
Was that strange? What was that like? Having to
really weird. Also, just getting past his face is just so hard because he is the male Angelina Jolie. So just being able to concentrate or like focus in and not pass out when you look at him is a struggle for
all
of us.
You're suggesting he's hideous?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Angelina Jolie. Ugh.
Right.
That's clearly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Ugh. It was very weird. It's like sort of he gives a lot with his face, which is great, thank God. But it felt like being in a silent movie. Working with Manny. There's something about him. He has so much charisma. He's also like, I think no one realizes how much that boy improvises. Outside of that scene that you're talking about, I do always just want to take an opportunity because I think people don't know how much he is one of the strongest improv artists I've ever seen in my entire life. He comes up with so many of his own like hilarious punchlines.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's incredible. He's got such a crazy brain and he, unfortunately for us, never warns us before it's about to fly out of his mouth. But so then we always ruin the take, the first magical take of him. But yeah, I think it was all a big challenge, but he gives quite a lot. And it was mostly my interactions with Eleanor and Ted in the episode that we're currently talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it was like before we humanized Tahani, which was really fun to play because I got to be fully disgusting and just got to channel everyone I've ever disliked who I've met while I was DJing in London. And I got to pour all of the worst parts of these people just like in via a... just pour it all into a bottle that turned into Tahani. And then after that, we start to humanize her and we start to go back into her life story and you realize why she's such an asshole.
And she is such an asshole because she exists in the shadow of her sister.
Yeah, and she's treated terribly by her parents who are always just like fat shaming or brain shaming her. success shaming. She raises $5 million for charity. That's considered an embarrassment to them. Like, they are just so hard on her. They celebrate everything her sister does. I'm sure so many people who are siblings of other people can relate to that. And I think you, like, even I've started to change the way that I look at unbearable people. Like, when I meet someone who's horribly vain or irritating and, you know, who brags a lot, very arrogant, then I've started to look back into, like, Tahani's past and realise that that often comes from pain. Doesn't mean you have to be friends with them, but you don't have to be unkind. You just step away and feel sad.
I think that that's a fascinating thing. I feel as though even my brief interaction with this show has impacted the way that I look at the world. I mean, I think it's
you think you're a worse person? You seem like a worse person.
I obviously have devolved and am getting worse. I was really kind. I mean, nearly.
Well, you were fine.
Christ-like. No, I don't know. I saw someone last night that was palpably unpleasant, and at first I was like, ugh, and then I definitely took a more pitying tone towards this person.
Ah, pity.
Yeah.
The true.
Well, not
the true moral stance. Today.
Maybe. Empathy, I guess, is what I'm looking
for. I think empathy is the better word.
Passion.
It's definitely changed the way that I think about these things. And I do now think about a bloody point system.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a big litterer, but maybe a couple of times I'd littered, guys.
Is that true?
We're all friends. A couple of times I just had a little wrapper, threw it out the car. I'm not proud of myself. I have not done that in the 3 years. Since we started this show, I've realised that I'm being watched and counted on all the time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm getting better slowly but surely. I'm becoming a better person.
Camille, are there other places in Los Angeles that people should check out that are locations that you've used on this job or other jobs, things that that people should check out?
Oh, wow. I've gotten a chance to work in some really great spots. And I would say if you get a chance to watch any old movies in some of the great old movie theaters that are being redone in downtown L.A., go look at them. Check out the architecture in
downtown.
Up and
down Broadway, right?
Up and down Broadway.
I've taken a conservancy tour of those, and they're fascinating.
Yeah. We've been very, very fortunate that we get to go into some places are a little off limits to the general public, but if you're lucky, you can get into a tour that will get you into those theaters, the Dutch Chocolate Factory, which we've worked at.
Which we did. That's on the Science Street on maybe 6th or something in downtown Los Angeles. And that was the Museum of Human Misery, Human Suffering.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's a fantastic spot. And I keep trying to talk some friends into turning it into a speakeasy.
Oh, yes. I like that idea a great deal.
Yeah. But there are a lot of really, there's some gems out there in L.A. if you find yourself.
The building that doubles for the architect's office is pretty gorgeous, and that's an old Bank of America.
It's an old Bank of America building, and it's used as an event space.
Is it?
Yeah, lots of weddings. We go in there, and there's...
Fans of The Good Place could have access to some pretty key locations that you see on screen frequently.
Almost definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to talk to Manny coming up very shortly. Is there anything that you want to know about Manny Jacinto?
Anything that I want to know about Manny?
Well, if you were in my seat as a BBC presenter, what would you ask Manny?
My boyfriend's here, but I'm going to ask this. How would he rate me as a kisser?
Oh, very good.
No, I'm joking. We had a very, very small peck. It was a very small... That doesn't mean another word, does it? Peck.
Not in this country, no.
This has gone wrong.
Yes.
I'm going to think of something else to say.
oh, no, I've got all I need.
Cool.
Thank you. Camille, what's good?
What's good? Working with a great bunch of people every day, and it's a joy to come in and work on a fantastic project.
You do an amazing job.
Thank you, my dear.
Jamila.
And you too.
What?
What's good?
What's good? What is good? Spooning? That's all right. No?
I'm not judging.
A clothes on spoon?
Sure.
Spoon? What?
No, it's good.
Is that bad? You wanted me to say something better for the world.
No, it's that you framed Forking? Your answer as a question. This isn't Jeopardy.
Oh, right, okay.
Spooning?
Spooning.
Perfect.
I'm going to say it with more authority.
Will you tell us a little bit about what it is that you're doing this afternoon and your recent work?
Yes, I'm going to speak at a conference. I'm going to speak at a conference for Stanford University at something called a Near Futurist Summit, which is for 300 different people who are doing something in the immediate future to try and change the world for better. And I have started a campaign on the internet called I Way, which is at @I_Way. It's on Instagram, and it's basically a museum of self-worth where I posted something on the internet about what I weigh, because I feel like, I don't think anyone can disagree that women are generally valued by how little space we can physically take up in the world and how tiny and young we look forever. And no matter what we achieve, no matter what cancer we survive or cure, we are always made to feel as though our looks are of the most importance, which is something that I don't think men really have to deal with as much as we do. They're told to aspire to many different things. It's very multifaceted what a man should achieve, like success or a good family or strength. And men are supposed to be big and strong and women are supposed to be small and sexy and weak. It's just, there's a lot of mixed messaging out there and it's quite damaging messaging for women. And so I decided to say how I weigh myself, which is my relationship, my job that I love, the fact that I'm financially independent, the fact that I am an outspoken activist, just the thing, my friends, the friendships that I have, the experiences I get to have. These are the ways that I think about myself as a rounded individual, and I look at all of the different parts of myself. It's not to say that looks are completely irrelevant, but they should be in your top 10, never the thing that defines you. So I Weigh is a bunch of women, like, I mean, thousands of women now, and even some men now, are sending in posts of how they weigh themselves, and seeing what people have gone through is so incredible. And they've battled depression and they're being really honest about their childhoods, but they're also finally being proud of themselves. And it does feel a bit like people are honestly waking up from some sort of like self-hatred coma and realizing that they're all amazing and important individuals who were just made to feel like nothing because the newspapers and the Hollywoods told them so.
And you went with spooning.
Mm-hmm. Look, okay, you know, I can't control this brain. This is, I live with this.
Set designer Camille Brokowski. Jamila, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. Now go do something good.
Hi there. The podcast is over. I think what I'm feeling is sadness.
Oh, don't worry, Janet. This podcast is the most perfectly engineered invention since the paperclip.
Fun fact, the man who invented the paperclip is in The Bad Place for tax evasion.
It's available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stop saying podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
Music composed by David Schwartz. Yay.